Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley, and today we're going to talk about smartphones and other digital devices, you know, like iPads and things that are great tools, I hope. I know that there's some school systems that are doing away with it all. So we're going to try to bring a balanced picture here. Richard, first just describe some of these devices so that we are all have an understanding of what we're talking about.
It's interesting because there's more of them showing up all the time.
Yeah.
It used to be that you got a phone, it was attached to a line. Then it's gone, you got the flip phone.
Yes.
And then came the smartphone, which of the first of those was the iPhone. And then there are now phones that are like the iPhone, but are different. They're Android phones, they call them, because they use a different operating system. The iPhone was a Mac or Apple-based system. The Androids are everything else, kind of like IBM PCs and Apple PCs. You know, one is all of the others, and one is Apple all by itself. But these usually have a screen on them, and that screen displays words, and you can text with it, call it, connect to the internet, take notes on them, watch videos, take pictures. Tons of things that you can do with these smartphones now. They are miniature computers, essentially, with a lot of graphic capability to them.
Now, I just would like to put a word of caution. I noticed that they have come out with a whole set of protective devices. You can get covers that protect you from the gamma rays. You can get underwear that protect you from the gamma rays. That is just recently being explored, that these smart devices actually change how our cells work on our body. And so that is just a word of caution, because we don't know how this is going to impact our bodies. Having all of this electrical waves that we can't see, these gamma rays and different types of rays, how they impact the human body at the cellular level. So that's just a little word of caution. Now tell me, Richard, about how these devices help students learn, what you've experienced.
Well, that was interesting for me. When I was in the classroom, in my era, we didn't have these things.
No.
And as they have become more prominent, now, and the price has gone down, down, and down, kids are beginning to have them all the way down to the first grade.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin to see these smartphones showing up. And initially, the policy on the smartphones seemed to be, if we see that smartphone in your hand, we are taking it. If you show that you have that smartphone, I remember when my daughter was in the eighth grade, she's now in high school, but when she was in the eighth grade, they were not allowed to have cell phones in the school. Period. Well, when I went to be a substitute, long-term substitute this year in the classroom, they were allowed to have cell phones in that classroom. But the cell phones were not supposed to be used unless permission was asked of the teacher and the teacher gave permission. Of course, temptation is always there for the student, and there was many times when I collected cell phones.
Now, the temptation, you know, we're going to talk about this later on, but if the child is addicted to that device, if there's even such a thing, and we might debate whether there is such a thing or not, that's a pretty hard thing. You're always going to be having to address it then, because that child is so drawn to that device. So did you ever confiscate any?
Oh, yes. I would take them from them. My teaching style was that I was engaged with the students in the classroom. I did not want to go into a classroom and say, here's your assignment, and then go sit in the back corner.
Mm-hmm.
My preference was that there were not going to be any homework coming out of the classroom during my time there. So I would tell the students, if we have these things that we need to do, here's what they are. By the time we are done with the class, you will be done. But we're going to be engaged in the process here of discussion.
Now, I think that brings up the point or the questions. What are the responsibilities of the teachers in the classroom when it comes to these smart devices?
You know, I found at times that they were useful that they had those smart devices, because sometimes involved in the conversations we would have, questions could come up that the textbooks didn't necessarily have the answer to. Well, a smartphone would get you an answer pretty quick. And you could validate that answer by seeing, okay, is it scholarly enough to be something that I would use, or is it something that is not a credible source? Because the sources are also mm-hmm. available there. And it's very quick. So you could get answers to some things, and you could find out peripheral information very quickly on either a cell phone, or if you had the iPads or the Zumba pads or mm-hmm. the Nooks or the other types of pads that are out there, or laptops or PCs, you can come
now,
up with the information quickly.
The data plans, that did the school provide the data plan, or were these children using their parents' data plan?
If they were using cell phones, they were using their parents' data plans. If they used the school's computers, they were using the school's.
Yes, and that brings up a whole nother problem. You know, we have worked so hard at having safety on the internet at schools, particularly reliable if the children should happen upon inappropriate material. But how do you monitor that on their cell phones?
That's a difficult thing. And what I did, if I caught someone looking up something on the internet, and that's not hard to do. If you're engaged in the classroom, you can mm-hmm. see when the student's not engaging you. Mm-hmm. And no matter if they're not engaging you by looking underneath the desk, no matter, you can generally tell when they're on the cell phone for something that they shouldn't be. Then I would take the cell phone away, and they did not get it back until the end of the class period. Or for recidivists, which you have a few of those, the next step was you were not going to get it back until mm-hmm. you went and talked to the principal.
Now, I was working in public school when the smartphones really became a big thing. And the policy was, if you're caught with your smartphone, we will take it and you will not get it back till the end of the school year. And they were very strict. They didn't want students filming actions in the school. They didn't want students communicating any shape or form. And I think now I think the policy is still the same, because when I drive by that public school, it still says, you know, it has a picture of a smartphone and a big X through it. I thought it would be good to go through the symptoms of a smartphone addiction and just tell me if you really think this would be something that a teacher or a parent should look at. Can you tell if the child has a heightened sense of euphoria whenever they are working with their smartphone? And I don't know how you would tell that. Okay.
That's a difficult one. You know, perception is reality.
Yeah.
So if someone were looking for that heightened sense of euphoria, they probably would see it. Someone who wasn't looking for it probably wouldn't see it.
Well, I mean, a teacher, I guess, could apply it to themselves. Do they get, you know, some satisfaction? Well, the smartphone, that's one of the wonderful things that Steve Jobs wanted to incorporate into those devices, was the beautiful color, the wonderful experience. He was relating it, he said, to his experience when he was on LSD, and he wanted that same heightened experience in a technological form. So, yes, it's designed to create a pleasure sensation. Okay, let me go to number two. This one probably would be a bigger symptom. Is there a general neglect of friends, family, and priority given to that device? And maybe even in a classroom, you could see that the student is constantly, they don't mind if it's going to be taken away for the day, because they know they'll get it back again tomorrow or after school, and they're just so drawn to the exclusion of their schoolwork. Did you see any of that?
No, I didn't. Actually, I don't know that I had any students who I would call addicted to their cell phones. For one thing, when I first started in there, I made the rule very clear that I was not going to accept cell phones being in the classroom unless you were going to use them as a calculator, in which case you needed to come and ask me if you could use it as a calculator. Students who didn't who chose to ignore that rule then lost their cell phones. And there weren't very many students who were grabbing their cell phone every few minutes just to look at it or whatever. Most of them kept their cell phones put away. I had one young man who liked shoes a lot, which is a weird thing. And so every once in a while he would be looking up shoes, but if he didn't have a cell phone to look up shoes, he was looking up shoes and catalogs.
Mm. So it was a symptom of a shoe addiction.
Yeah, he liked shoes, tennis shoes.
Okay, here's another symptom. They've tried several times to cut back on using their cell phones, but have failed to control that behavior.
Yeah, again,
so that's
Okay,
let's continue. They suffer from sleep deprivation because they engage in their cell phone, maybe texting and stuff through the night. This is just interesting stuff. They develop a general style of dishonesty and increasingly engage in the denial. Now, these are some physical symptoms. Increased stress, weight gain or loss, backaches, headaches, high blood pressure, gastric or other health problems. And I think this is just a good thing for our listeners to know. They withdraw from all real life activities that were once pleasurable. They don't like to go outside. They can't see the beauty and enjoy the pleasure of nature. And then the last one, they may have feelings of guilt, shame, anxiety, or depression because of this obsession, essentially, that they've gained with their smartphones. I think that maybe this list my teacher should go through, because I don't know if you've ever witnessed a teacher that might be struggling with this.
There are, and that was something that was fascinating to me. Teachers, first of all, I have difficulty with making rules for students that teachers don't have to adhere to.
Yes, that's the number one thing. We need to walk the talk.
Yes, and students know it. And it's very easy to become disengaged from your students, because being engaged with the students is hard work. They are going to challenge you mentally and emotionally all day long, even if it's nothing more than coming up and being your friend.
Yes.
They're going to draw something from you. Students need and want that interaction. Mm-hmm. Students want to be felt that you appreciate them for who they are. And that's part of the responsibility of a teacher. You know, the Pygmalion effect is something that doesn't have enough credibility in most classrooms. But how a teacher feels about their student, how a teacher comes across to that student, or how that student perceives that teacher feels about them, is huge for that student. And if a device gets between you and your capacity to engage that student, that's bad news. So for me, I would say that cell phones, especially because of their ease of slipping them in and out of your pocket, becoming engaged in it rather than in your students, you know, it's almost like you should say to the teachers, if I catch you with your cell phone, it's locked up for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of the students, because I don't believe that students at, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade are going to exhibit as much of that addiction. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some who are addicted by then, but most of them are so involved in so many other things that cell phones are just one of those things.
Yeah.
And texting, I think, is a bigger issue with, to me, texting is a bigger issue.
I want to talk more about texting, and I also want to talk about how the smartphone is changing the brain back. Okay, well, welcome back. We're talking about smartphones and other devices, and we've just gone through some of the things that, you know, are positive about them, and now we're going to talk a little bit about, I don't know if we'd say potential dangers, but we're going to talk about the impact that the smartphone has on the brain's pleasure system. There is something about that instant, you know, finding that instant answer, finding that instant picture, finding that instant entertainment that really impacts the pleasure system of the brain. Now you're looking at me with kind of a funny look.
Yes, I am. Because guess what? As often as I have read through articles or books, when I come to that aha moment, I get the same pleasure sensation. And so the question I would have is, if you can come up with the answer quicker, are you losing, it's just like if you had to go to the grocery store once upon a time, you had to walk because there wasn't a bicycle. Then maybe bicycles came along and you got to ride a bicycle, which meant you got to the store quicker to get what you need and got back more efficiently. Well, then came the car. The car got you to the grocery store quicker and you could haul more stuff back with it. It was more efficient. So now you apply the same thing to technology. Once upon a time, if you wanted to earn an advanced degree or do some research, you had to go to a library and you had to go through the card catalog. You did not have metadata to search from. You had a concept and you might have to start with some authors to find something. And you worked long and hard in that library to get all of the information that you needed to write either a dissertation or a thesis. Well, now, if you want to write a dissertation or a thesis, you have libraries that are all electronic, all online, and you can do a lot of research with them. The thing is, the volume of available resources is astronomically greater now. You have to sift through a whole lot more material now than you ever did when you were dealing in a library at a university. So some things have changed, for instance, getting the information quicker and more efficiently. You know, I guess I would put it to you this way. I have a child who is normal, quotes, and I have a child who's dyslexic. Is there an advantage to making this dyslexic child go through the same process of trying to understand what they're reading and then trying to write it down, because that's just the way it's traditionally done, as opposed to taking this child who has real disabilities in this area and letting them use those senses and those capacities that are not disabled to get to the same point?
Well, and I think everything you say points to using our smart devices to help in the educational realm. But when it comes to pleasure centers, I'm talking about all of the quick action games and the visual and what it does. I think anybody who wants to read more about this needs to go to Dr. Hart's book, Thrilled to Death, How the Endless Pursuit of Pleasure is Leaving Us Numb. And he talks about how this not only overloads our pleasure center, but it leaves little left for enjoying the things that God has given us for pleasure, like the outdoors. And I see this in students when I take them outside. You know, at first they'll go, I'm bored. You know, they don't have their electronic devices with them. I go, well, just give yourself a little bit of time, decompress. And those that are really into all the gaming things, it takes them a long time. And I don't know if they ever fully enjoy it as much as someone else. Now, we're talking about children whose brains are forming, whose thinking patterns are forming, that are being exposed to a lot of gaming on their digital devices or their parents' digital devices, and how that is robbing their pleasure centers of something. It's taking away. I think it's taking away.
I agree with that. When you're talking about gaming, I think the same kind of impact, maybe to more degree or lesser degree, I'm not sure, but when you're looking at kids who spend a lot of time in front of a TV, they would get the same mm-hmm. kinds of effects. There may be some different effects to it. You end up living in a parallel universe to reality.
Yeah.
With TV, you could watch all kinds of violence, all kinds of other things happening on the TV, and there was nothing you could do about it. And that I don't know how that translates into the apathy.
Yeah. Now, the next system they want to talk about, and the next system that I want to talk about is the tranquility system, being able to calm myself, being less anxious. Don't you think that these smart devices cause more stress?
Being connected 24/7, I'm not sure what the research is on that, but one thing I know, part of the human nature is a part that requires meditation,
mm-hmm.
a part that requires backing off, disconnecting. being disconnected. As a matter of fact, the book Blue Zones made it very clear when it looked at the different areas of the world where there were different geographic areas in the world with people who lived there who had longevity and high quality of life. When the Blue Zones did that study, one of the things they found, particularly among Seventh-day Adventists, was that complete and total disconnect one day a week made a significant difference both in longevity and quality of life. So
part of managing our smartphones is we have to be able to set them aside.
Yes, I think.
And take a break.
I think it's temperance. You know, temperance is kind of like a dirty word anymore. People don't think too much about temperance. But temperance is a serious thing. In all things, be temperate.
Yeah.
If we aren't careful with these electronic devices, I imagine there's, as research gets an opportunity to show it, there will be differences in the way the brain develops.
Well, that takes up, now that kind of skipped the memory system. Well, the memory system and the learning system are both affected by smart devices. The memory system, we're seeing brain change, where the brain now no longer has to memorize because it can quickly find whatever it needs to find. We're seeing that change. And then the learning system, I guess they're kind of tied together. It's creating what researchers are calling brain fatigue because we're putting so much information. And I'm guilty. I mean, I'm guilty of this too.
But don't you think that the memory system, part of the problem with the memory system is that we simply aren't requiring people to memorize? It's not a matter of the cell phones replacing or these electronic devices replacing the capacity to memorize, but rather people aren't requiring it anymore. You know, it used to be that, especially in parochial schools, there was a memory verse that you needed to memorize. And I still know some people today who can tell you all of the memory verses they memorized, you know, one right after the other. Some people can't, but they are in the brain.
Well, Dr. Klingberg thinks that the reason it's actually changed is because we're forcing the brain to do this switching from one task to the other. We really can't multitask. We call it multitasking, but we're actually the brain switching from one to the other, and it has had to really develop that aspect of our brain, and so it's changed now in that's building. And then the memory part is shrinking.
Would that have to do with the length of the dendrites? You know, something, because actions are happening in the brain at a faster pace, you would have shorter.
Yes, yes. It has to do with
growth.
Yeah, it has to do because we just don't use those. Whatever we don't use minimizes, and whatever we use, you know, grows in the brain. So
I imagine
that would be interesting. We could probably do a whole show on that. We're actually have come to the end of our show today on smart devices, and we feel no smarter than we did before we started. But I hope it has brought you to thinking about it. You know, is that smart device controlling your life, or are you controlling it? And be aware that your children can become so focused on it to the detriment of the important relationships around them, being able to enjoy the simple things of life, like a walk in the woods. And with that, we'll have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.